First of all, what did he actually show? He showed that the FBI is either the most bungling, incompetent agency that we've ever had on a government payroll, or this was an operation. So you begin to see the pattern of an FBI sting operation. We've seen enough of these over the years to know this is how the FBI works. But the question then is, well, what's in it for the FBI? The question then you have to ask is, well, who is so upset about Donald Trump and why? Well, events in the last 2 weeks give you a good insight. But I think to get to the deeper question, if we just separate out the story of Ukraine that everyone's heard from the fake hearings with the real story of Ukraine, you get the better picture.
Most of my listeners have heard of the amazing antioxidant and immunity building benefits of C60, but what you may not know is how amazing black seed oil is as a carrier for C60. Black seed oil has been called the miracle herb by the National Health Institute because of all the health benefits such as anti-inflammatory, anti-diabetic, and so much more. That is why I personally take the ultra pure 99.99% C60 in black seed oil. It's now available in gel caps, so no more slurping down that disgusting oil. Listeners can get Live Longer Labs' patented Ultra Pure No Solvent C60 at exclusive discounted prices now at my shop. Go to sarahwestall.com under shop and learn more. Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have the great Harley Schlinger coming back to the program. I really enjoy having him on. We talk really broad and really try to connect the dots on everything that's going on. We're, of course, going to talk about the Horowitz report. We're going to talk about impeachment. We're going to talk about what's going on with the Fed and the bailouts that are continually going on. How does that all tie into impeachment? I mean, what is going on? How does that tie to the city of London? How does that tie to China? How does it tie to Russia and Ukraine? We're going to be talking about all of that stuff, and he's tying it all together and giving a big picture how it ties into the UN, World War One and Two, and the difference of philosophies, you know, that are changing, the landscape that's changing. I think it's a really eye-opener. He does a once-a-week seminar that he does, and he does it on his Facebook page. And then, of course, he does all his blogs that you can sign up for his blog. I repost most of his articles on my website as well. So if you're ever on my website, you can just click on his name and sign up for his blog there. You can't go wrong reading and learning. And that's what we talk about here. It's all about learning. Let's figure this out. Let's learn. We got to fix our country. And it's all about creating health, the foundation of our country, whether it's healthy people, happy people, well-educated, not brainwashed, and money going into the sector that's productive. And so we're talking about that and how China and Russia are doing that. And we are, frankly, we're screwing around. And so while we still have some power, negotiating power, we need to do it now. With this impeachment and all the other bogus stuff going on, are we going to? And Trump needs to get ahead of this. He needs to figure out while he still has negotiating power to make all that. And I think he knows that. I think there's some things he needs to do more. And hopefully he knows all that as well. But before I get into this, I want to tell you about my Patreon. I have an exclusive interview with Patrick Berge talking about why his whistleblower information is legit. If you have not seen my interview with Patrick Berge right before this one aired, I highly recommend it. He has the goods on ShadowNet, what that was, how it's being used all over the place against the American people. It was used in Ukraine. He was one of the developers and people on ShadowNet, and it was done by Obama's national security officer, his family. And it's a bombshell of information in that video. So I highly recommend you watching. It's a two-parter, of course. This one's going to be a two-parter because it's very long. So go to my Patreon. You can see the exclusive on that one. And also, I have exclusive deals on the snake oil. I highly recommend you try that because the cost of the snake oil, you will save in gas mileage. And then it also, because the compound goes in and it reduces the friction in all your different systems in your car, and it saves you money on maintenance as well. It just makes your car better. And so it's a no-brainer thing to get, because the cost of the product is saved in gas and more, and then on maintenance. So I have a special deal for patrons as well. If you buy one, you get two more free to use in other cars or for gifts. So great deal. So let's get into my show now with Harley Scheininger. Harley, thank you so much for rejoining the program.
Oh, I'm happy to see you again.
We have a lot to talk about. The Horowitz report came out, the impeachment scam hoax. There's so much to talk about. And you have done so much research over the years. You know what's, based on all your knowledge, you know what's behind this. You've been doing a lot of research on that. And you've read the Horowitz report in detail and then can connect all those dots. First of all, can you dive into the Horowitz report and tell me what your thoughts are on that?
Well, I think there are two levels to look at it. First of all, what did he actually show? He showed that the FBI is either the most bungling, incompetent agency that we've ever had on a government payroll, or this was an operation. Now, Horowitz said he couldn't prove that there was a malign intent, but he proved gross abuses, incompetence, and some of these coincidences that go are just not believable. And I think Attorney General Barr hit it on the nose where he said, it's just not believable that all of these things just happen. And so if you look at let's just take one example, the Carter Page, which is one of the key ones, that Carter Page was selected as the entry point to run the operation. Now, the FBI was told that Carter Page was reporting all of his Russian contacts to the CIA. And the CIA told the FBI he was working with them. But supposedly some middle-level FBI attorney changed the email so that it looked like that wasn't the case. Now, if you believe that, you know, you'll believe anything. The point is, they use that as an operation, as an entry point, that along with what Mifsud did with Papadopoulos, to set up the story of Russian intervention. And now this is what Barr and Durham are trying to unravel. And they're doing it in the right way. They're looking at Alexander Downer, the Australian diplomat who's very close to the Clintons. He was the high commissioner to Britain. And he just happened to stumble into Papadopoulos in a bar when Papadopoulos drunkenly blurted out he had Russian emails. It's just not believable. The networks then included Mifsud, who Mueller in his report said is a Russian agent. And yet Mifsud's attorney says, no, he was working with the British. So you begin to see the pattern of an FBI sting operation. And we've seen enough of these over the years to know this is how the FBI works. But the question then is, well, what's in it for the FBI? Why would Comey, why would McCabe, why would Peter Strzok and Lisa Page do this? Now, Peter Strzok and these guys are not just dumb gumshoes. They're operating from a overall perspective, which Strzok and Page laid out in their text messages. Namely, we can't let Trump become president. And so the question then is, who is directing this? Now, this is why I think the key thing is going to be to get at the role of John Brennan and Brennan's connections to the British. Because the whole thing allegedly started when Hannigan from GCHQ, who's the British equivalent of the NSA, came to Brennan with these charges that there was some suspicious cyber activity from Russia. Now, we know what GCHQ is. This goes back to Sir William Stevenson and the World War II codebreakers. This is the grouping that set up the bad side of U.S. intelligence during World War II. They infiltrated the OSS. Sir William Stevenson, who's the famous book about him is A Man Called Intrepid, he's the one who brought in Louis Mortimer Bloomfield who was the guy that Jim Garrison said was coordinating the Kennedy assassination. So, you know, this goes way back, this British infiltration of the United States. But just to stick with the Horowitz report, the inconsistencies, the abuses, and so on point to something much deeper. So the question then you have to ask is, well, who is so upset about Donald Trump and why? Well, events in the last 2 weeks give you a good insight. Trump met with Sergei Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister. And what did he talk about? The same thing he talked about Putin with in the Helsinki summit. Can we set up an arms control process so we don't each spend $700 to $800 billion a year on weapons we hope we'll never use? This is really crucial because Trump is serious about breaking this geopolitical game of the British and the Americans against the Russians, which, of course, goes back to the end of World War II.
So in that case, it's just about money. It's just about we want to be able to sell weapons. The military-industrial complex wants this profit gravy train to continue.
But it's not just about the money from weapons, because the military-industrial complex is not just weapon producers. It includes the consultants now in the Beltway, Alexandria, Virginia networks, which now there are tens of thousands of them. We just saw from the Afghan papers, these are the guys who came up with the plans to rebuild Afghanistan and Iraq. Now, did they really take the pallets of money that they got from the U.S. government and rebuild anything? No, they stole it. So it's this process of nation building, but it goes beyond that because there's an intersection between these defense contractors and the global cartels, whether it's financial, insurance, raw material cartels, food cartels. These are the ones who have dictated the terms of the so-called free trade agreements through the World Trade Organization. Interestingly, this is something Trump has said he would take on from the day he went into office. And he did end the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and he's rewritten NAFTA, and he's trying to work a separate major deal with China. So that was something they were upset about. But the thing they were mostly, also the Paris Climate Accord. You know, I don't know if you know this, Sarah, but well, this is important. Pelosi, the day she came back to announce that there's going to be articles of impeachment drafted, the day before that, she was at the Paris Climate Conference. And she was there with about 8 Green Democrats. And what did she say? She said, "We're here to tell you we're still in." Now, this is Pelosi usurping the power that belongs to Trump. Trump, 2 months earlier, officially filed for the U.S. to get out of the Paris Climate Accord, which he had promised he would do. And because of their strange bylaws, it takes another year before we're officially out. But he said, "We're out. We're done with it."
It's like the Brexit, where they said, "We're not leaving." And that's what Pelosi is doing to us. We're not. Yeah. They're essentially trying to create that same situation.
Well, in the old days, it was called dual power. Who actually is making the decisions? And Pelosi said in Madrid at the Paris COP25 conference, "We, the Congress, are determining that we're staying in this," when Trump said we're not. Now, the same thing, if you saw any of the Ukraine hearing in front of the intelligence, so-called intelligence committee with Adam Schiff, you had all these so-called consummate professionals who are anti-Trump, who are part of the what some people call the deep state, military-industrial complex, permanent bureaucracy, shadow government, whatever term you have for it. We see this as the Anglo-American intelligence network. And what did they say? They said Trump is doing things that are disrupting our game. Well, that's good.
We don't like
him. The game is horrible.
Yeah, they just said we don't like him.
The American people don't like the game. Yeah.
I mean, it was a clown show of opinions is what it was. There was no facts. There was nothing. It was just they got professor after professor to come up there and give us their opinion because they don't like Trump's policies.
Well, and there were two that I just call attention to. One was this guy, George Kent, because what Kent did in his discussion was discuss how we knew what to do, but Trump and Giuliani and Volcker didn't. And then Kent showed what a fraud he is, because he said the neo-Nazi Azov battalion, the people who ran the coup in Ukraine in February 2014, were like the American Minutemen, freedom fighters. Now, here's a guy who worked with Victoria Nuland, worked with the Clinton holdovers in the State Department, with John Kerry, and with Christopher Steele, who was in Ukraine during the time of the coup. And what are they saying? That remnants of the neo-Nazi movement in Ukraine, which came to power with the coup, were like the American freedom fighters. Now, no one in the Congress would call him on it. They let that pass. But the other one was Fiona Hill, who, when the question was raised, is it possible Ukraine was involved in meddling in the U.S. elections? She said, that's a fictional narrative, and anyone who says it is providing propaganda points for Putin. So basically, she's saying Trump, Giuliani are Putin puppets. Now, then Pelosi and Schiff and Nadler ruled out of order any questioning of the role of certain Ukrainian operatives in the Russiagate story, including this Alexandra Chalupa, who worked for the DNC, who was involved in the setup of Paul Manafort, and was getting Ukrainian government cooperation to go against Trump. That's not allowed to be brought up, though, because that's, quote, a fictional narrative, unquote, according to the best minds of the U.S. intelligence community. And let me make one other point on this. The other thing they said repeatedly is that there was no Ukrainian collusion. It was Russian. That's incontestable. How do we know it? The intelligence community said it. Well, the intelligence community also said that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. They also said the North Vietnamese attacked us in the Gulf of Tonkin in 1964. They lie for the purposes of these higher geopolitical manipulations.
Patrick Berge, the whistleblower I just had on, he says that he knows for sure they're lying because he wrote those programs, and his job specifically was to make sure we knew where they were coming from, we know exactly where this information is coming from. Because so it's not true.
Well, Horowitz in his report said that they interviewed the person that Christopher Steele said was one of his sources for Trump's corruption with Putin. And in the report, Horowitz said this guy's known as a braggart. He's unreliable. The FBI knew he was unreliable. They had interviewed him. And yet they still used the Steele report to go into the FISA court to get the warrant to spy on Carter Page and the Trump campaign. So you have all of this evidence that's coming forward, and more will come. But I think to get to the deeper question, if we just separate out the story of Ukraine that everyone's heard from the fake hearings with the real story of Ukraine, you get the better picture. You know, this is something very few people know, but in 1991, when the Soviet Union fell and the communist governments collapsed, Ukraine had the 10th highest per capita GDP in the world, because it was the machine tool center, the military center, it was the military industrial complex for much of the Soviet Union, Eastern Ukraine. They had full set machine tool capabilities. Now, after the fall of communism, who was sent in to make Ukraine a market capitalist country? The International Monetary Fund, the British bankers, and Wall Street. And they did to Ukraine the same thing they did to Russia. They stole resources. They took over the nationalized enterprises and turned them over to private hands who just looted them. Shut down industries, stole pension money, and so on. Now, Ukraine suffered from this between 1991 and 2013. In 2013, because of the horrors of the economy, they'd lost 10 million people, by the way, a demographic collapse. By 2013, you now had the groundwork laid for a so-called democratic revolution, which was funded heavily by the State Department, the National Endowment for Democracy, George Soros, of course, and was being run through the State Department. And that led to the Maidan coup, which brought in Poroshenko. Now, between 2014 and today, Ukraine has deteriorated further because of the International Monetary Fund policies and the looting. Today, Ukraine is 42nd out of 42 European countries in GDP per capita. So it went from 10th in the world to 42nd in Europe in the space of the 30 years that people like Taylor and Kent and Fiona Hill were in charge of Ukraine. Now, when Obama came in, who became the point man for Ukraine? Joe Biden. And the real corruption of the Bidens, I mean, look, Hunter Biden did what the Biden types always do, you know, stole off the top as much as he could. But the real issue here was that Ukraine was being used as a weapon against Russia to bring Ukraine into NATO, move troops closer to the Russian border. And why was that so important? Because Putin, as a nationalist, was not going along with the International Monetary Fund, was not going along with the globalization policy. He was working toward a Eurasian perspective with Xi Jinping and others. Now, Trump comes in, and the people who run these things look at Trump and they say, look, he doesn't like the IMF, he doesn't like the Federal Reserve, he doesn't like the global bankers. We'd better be careful with this guy, especially if he talks to Putin and Xi Jinping. So the Russiagate story was set up to try and prevent Trump from moving toward an alliance with Russia and China. Now, historically, the United States has been an ally of Russia most of our history. The communist period is an exception, and the communist period was a terrible period for Russia. They wrecked the country. But after the communists, the IMF went in and did a better job wrecking it than the communists had done. And so Putin pulled it out, you know, by the bootstraps. Russia reversed its demographic collapse. Russia now has one of the lowest levels of debt per capita in the world. They're buying gold like crazy. Their oil business is prospering. They're now involved in all kinds of deals in Africa to build nuclear power plants and dams and hydroelectric plants working with China. This is a shift away from the funny money that's been imposed on the Western countries. Imposed by who? The City of London and Wall Street. And we're in a very precarious moment right now because the Wall Street London policies after 2008 have built up a bigger bubble with more leverage, with less physical production to back it up. And we're now in since September 17th, we've been in a period where in order to cover day-to-day debt, the Federal Reserve has had to step in into the so-called repo markets to loan between $60 and $110 billion on a 24-hour basis so zombie corporations can cover their costs day-to-day. Now, I know this is a lot to go through, but just to finalize the point, the Bank of America did a study that showed there are 548 major and mid-sized corporations in the U.S. and Western Europe that are zombie corporations. They don't make enough annual profit to cover the interest on their debt. They're the ones who go to the repo market so they can pay their bills day by day. The fear was that when the repo market was just JP Morgan Chase, the French banks, a few others loaning the money, what if these zombie corporations go bankrupt? It would trigger a domino collapse of the banking system. So they got out of it, even though they were able to charge.
The zombie corporations, are they all banks or are they also military industrial complex company, you know, military contractors and manufacturers, or is it just banks you're talking about?
No, it's not just banks. It's all corporations.
That's what I thought. Now, the thing that I'm going to throw out there is that smaller corporations go bankrupt. The big ones are bailed out, but keep going.
Well, that's the point. These are the Bank of America study showed that these are large and mid-sized corporations that go to the repo markets. And the fact that they have no income, what were they going to the repo markets for? Among other things, to borrow money to buy their own stock, to push up their stock. And this has been a characteristic of the post-2008 crash period. Now, these companies should be put through organized financial bankruptcy. But the problem is the banks are the ones keeping them alive because the banks are holding their financial paper. A repo loan, what happens is a company will give some of its financial paper to a bank overnight in return for cash. And the next day, the bank returns the financial instrument, gets the cash plus interest. What happens if the banks start assuming these companies can't pay? They're not going to be able to collect the interest or get their money back. So they stopped lending. So who comes in to keep the money flowing? The Federal Reserve, the lender of last resort. And that's the $60 to $110 billion a day. They now have 14-day repo loans and 42-day repo loans. And on top of that, the Fed started quantitative easing again, $60 billion a month, in which they're taking in worthless paper from banks and corporations and giving them fresh dollars.
I want to bring this back to, it seems like we're playing a game of chicken. They, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like they're worried that Trump will reestablish this whole fiasco in a prudent way, more like Putin is doing. He's creating a healthy foundation so that we can rebuild our country in a healthy way instead of all these, you know, this house of cards that we have going on. And they are worried. I mean, so help sum this up, because how are they continuing this? And Trump, they're scared of Trump even being in the position he's in. So are they trying to impeach him so they can get the right person in when this whole reset happens? Is that really what's behind this?
That's an element of it. And it's very important what you identified as part of the problem. What they've set up is a casino system, a Ponzi scheme. And with any Ponzi scheme, unless there's fresh money or fresh blood coming in, it collapses. And so they have to keep the funds churning and roiling and skimming profits off of that. But where does the money come from? This is where the bailout, the $23 trillion after 2008 came in. This is where the $60 to $120 billion a day is going to fund continuing trading of worthless assets. Now, what they're most frightened of is that they're going to lose control either through a chain reaction collapse through something like financial derivatives. For example, Deutsche Bank could collapse, or a big American bank, or BNP Paribas, or Standard and Chartered. All of these banks have very terrible standing in terms of their leverage. But more importantly, what happens when this goes on is that there's no credit that goes into the real economy, into physical production, into manufacturing, into trade. We're seeing drops in the level of trade going on internationally. There are rail cars traveling across the country that are empty. Trucking companies are going out of business. So we're seeing a collapse of the physical economy of the United States and Western Europe, and no credit for that. Now, Trump was convinced, probably by Mnuchin, that the tax plan that he did would provide funds for reinvestment in manufacturing. And secondly, that the tariffs he implemented would also bring in money that could go into industrial investment. The mistake he made was that he didn't do what John Kennedy intended to do with his investment tax credit, which is to say you get the tax money back provided you do something useful with it. You put it into new plant and equipment, hiring new workers, developing new technologies, research and development. Instead, these corporations got the money from the tax cut. And what did they, and the money from the tariffs, and what do they do with it? They buy their own stock. They look for other speculative profits because they need somewhere between 10 and 20% interest to cover their own debt service. So when Trump started attacking Jerome Powell and the Federal Reserve, the red flags went up on Wall Street, because Trump is right to say we need low interest. But low interest for what? The speculative economy or the physical economy? And what they're terrified of is that Trump will pivot and say, all right, we're cutting off the credit to speculators. We're cutting off the credit to the swindlers, which is a more accurate term for them. And instead, we're going to direct it into the real economy. That's why he's trying to get these trade deals with Mexico and Canada, with Xi Jinping, a new deal with Britain, because he wants the money created by the Treasury as opposed to the Federal Reserve. He knows the Federal Reserve won't do it because the Federal Reserve is owned by the private banks. It's not a government agency. So what they fear is that Trump could pivot away from what we've done for the last 50, 60, 70 years with the economy, actually going back especially to 1971 when the dollar was taken off a gold reserve standard, that he could move away from that. Now, that's where the Russia question is important. Because if we're in a cold war with Russia, in a battle with Russia and China, and instead only allied with other countries that are doing the same thing we're doing, which is shutting down their physical production and speculating, the whole thing goes kablooey. So what's Trump looking at? He's looking at how do we become part of this new emerging paradigm of physical economic development. Now, if I may, just one, what may seem like a detour, but actually gets right to the point. This is going right to the heart of British geopolitics. In 1904, a man named Halford Mackinder drafted a document, the geopolitical pivot of geographical pivot of history. And then later in 1919, he extended it to say that in the future, whoever controls Eastern Europe will control the heartland, which is Eurasia. Whoever controls Eurasia will control the world island, which is Europe, Africa, and Asia. And whoever controls that controls the world. Therefore, what must the British do? They must use their navy, their seaports, their control of the sea to control world trade and must stop sovereign nations from having bilateral and multilateral agreements, which could then be brought in with transcontinental railroads and things of that sort. That was what Mackinder was talking about leading up to World War I. And the British policy from then to now was never allow a French-German-Russian alliance, because if that happens, the British are finished, especially if the Americans go with that. This is why World War I was fought. This is why World War II was fought. This is why the post-war period was organized the way it was. And now it's breaking down because of the stupidity of the establishment, the so-called ruling class, that believes that we can somehow, they can survive if they kill off billions of people on the planet, which they're going to do if their green policies are adopted and if they keep this funny money operation going.
Well, how do they think that killing off billions of people on the planet, it's not funny, but it's just so absurd. Is that how they deal with the lack of foundation? The lack of, when I say foundation, Putin, what he's doing is actually building wealth. I mean, he's creating companies that are producing. He's creating low debt. He's just doing the fundamentals of what you do. I mean, if you're building a business, that's a healthy business. And it's the same with a country. You're creating a healthy country. The alternative, what we're sitting at right now, is so unhealthy. I mean, I just don't understand anybody who's gets it at all would support this process that they're supporting.
Sarah, that's...
So does the killing of all those people, do they think that'll fix it? I mean, what the hell are they doing?
Well, in some cases, you're dealing with an insanity. When you look at someone like a Michael Bloomberg, a multi-billionaire, who wants to shut down every coal plant on the planet, that's going to kill people. He knows it. If you start shutting down the natural gas pipelines and the oil production, people are going to die. You shut down nuclear power. You shut down everything that has a so-called carbon footprint. People will die. Do they know that? Of course they do. Some of them believe that this goes back to the 60s and the idea of overpopulation. There are too many people. But let me just take it back again to the British, because at the time of our American Revolution, The British view was that an empire will work provided the colonies are kept stupid and dependent on the mother country for technology and for credit. The founding fathers, after our revolution, which included help from key networks in Germany, France, and Russia, and Sweden, the so-called League of Armed Neutrality, which most people don't know about. But after that revolution, there was an effort to establish a British economic system in the United States based on the ideas of John Locke. And I know many of your listeners probably have been taught that the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution is based on John Locke, the idea of life, liberty, and property. But in fact, the founding fathers rejected that. Locke was a founder of the Bank of England, which was the original private banking center that controlled a government. And the model of the Bank of England is what was used for the Federal Reserve. But the American founding fathers didn't do that. They set up a national bank on the principle of Hamiltonian credit, which is basically credit from the treasury that goes into producers. When Hamilton was running it, it went to people doing infrastructure, canals, roads, bridges, and then into manufacturers. And by the way, some of the early American manufacturers did intellectual property theft from Britain because the British weren't going to give us their technologies. But because of the credit policy of Hamilton, we built an independent sovereign nation.
And that's why we thrive, though, right? Because we had all those fundamentals that we're talking about. We had this, that's what created this booming America.
Well, and what Hamilton specified is you can use tariffs if necessary if there's economic warfare being conducted against you, which the British were doing in the revolution. Secondly, if you have taxes that will go toward things that improve the country, the conditions for everyone, such as infrastructure. That infrastructure doesn't make money, but infrastructure, by improving the productivity of the whole economy, the efficiency of the whole economy, does allow for increases in real wealth. And so those idiots today who say, well, you have to have pay as you go, which is the Clinton model, or the public-private partnerships, only if it makes money does it justify building a new road. Our founding fathers didn't think that way. They realized once you open up avenues of commerce in a way that makes it cheaper to move goods from one city to another.
I gotta tell you, they don't think that way either. Otherwise, they wouldn't be funding all these educational institutions, which has gone off the tracks. But that is an example of infrastructure, because it doesn't create money. Well, it might on its own because of the fleecing of students, but in and of itself, it doesn't.
Well, it would if we were actually educating people, it would create money. But instead, we're brainwashing them.
Well, that's exactly. Well, I know, but the concept of the educational institutions is the same concept of infrastructure. It's if you did it right.
So the idea in our Constitution is contained in the words, the general welfare. What is good for the people? And the Constitution leaves that in the hands of the people through voting, through participating in institutions of government, what Lincoln called of, by, and for the people. Now what we're seeing is in an attack on the American system, which has gone on for a long time, and it's especially gone on through quackademics in economics, you know, people who promote the most radical free trade policy, which essentially is shut down industry here and get cheap labor and cheap raw materials from somewhere else. That doesn't work. The American system rejected the idea of John Locke and the British and instead adopted the Hamiltonian policy. That's what Kennedy was trying to do in 1963 in June when he enacted this policy of producing treasury bills to get around the Federal Reserve, which was restricting credit, preventing the steel industry from taking advantage of new modern technologies. Kennedy was assassinated because of that, I'm sure. And then you look at what was done to Reagan. Reagan's idea of a defense buildup was that you do it in such a way that you maintain your military strength, but that you have spin-offs that go into the civilian economy. And if you look at what NASA did in the 60s, and then look at what the Strategic Defense Initiative was set to do under Reagan, with lasers, with plasma technologies, and so on, you can see the idea behind it. But when you just invest in military hardware to go in and destroy a nation, which is what we've been doing for the last 18 years, then it becomes pure profit for the arms producers because they're expending weapons all the time, wasting, you know, using ammunition, running down tanks and aircraft and so on. So more money is needed for that. But more importantly, there's no spin-offs. There's no new technologies. And when you then have a credit policy imposed on top of it, which has a flow of money into speculation, but nothing into physical production, you create a crisis. Now, to go back to this question of why do they think fewer people would work? I don't know. And at the time of the American Revolution, there was a guy named Thomas Malthus who came up with the Malthusian argument that there are too many poor people because we can't produce food enough to match population growth. Now, Malthus has been disproven by, you take any Iowa farmer, and an Iowa farmer can feed how many hundreds of people. You know, we've proven that with modern agriculture, modern industry, we can sustain a growing population. But the Malthusians today, who are cheerleading Greta Thunberg and this Green New Deal, these Malthusians really want to destroy population. They want to reduce population. They say there are too many people on the planet. There's not enough resources. Well, how do you create resources? The human mind, science. But what happens when science goes bad, as we see now with the so-called man-made climate change?
Well, when people stupid. Control the narrative and then do the bad science, and then the good scientists are blacked out. I mean, that's essentially what's going on. Well, okay, let's get back to this impeachment.